Today's Shir Masechet Matzia Daf Samches. We will begin on Daf Samach Zayin Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. In our previous Shir, the Gemara had spoken about someone who received a mashkin. He had lent money and he received a mashkin. And the Gemara had discussed under what circumstances could the malva who receives the mashkin eat from the payrus of that mashkin. The Gemara gave various examples of when somebody eats from the mashkin. Some situations the Gemara identified were ribbis d'araisa, and some situations the Gemara identified were avak ribbis, and some situations the Gemara said a tamat chacham should be careful, since as we discussed in our previous year, people learn from the behavior of a tamat chacham, and that's what the Gemara suggested. In such circumstances, they should be even stricter. And the Gemara begins today by teaching us Rapakana Rapapa Rav Ashi Loi Achli Ben Nechiaisu. Nechiaisu was, as we explained, that if the malva gets a mashkin and there's a predetermined amount, how much every year will be deducted from the loan, whether there's a lot of payers or there's not a lot of payers, and that's why the Gemara at the end of our shiur yesterday suggested that that is certainly not a problem of ribbis. But they still do not want to eat payrus from a mashkin, even in a situation of nechiaisa. Ravina ochel b'nechiaisa, Ravina did. And of course, the Mefarshim, the Rishonim already all ask that Ravina was a Talmud Chacham. And we just explained that a Talmud Chacham should be stricter in these issues. So if a Talmud Chacham should be stricter, why was Ravina not strict? So I saw a number of terutzim. One terutz is that Ravina did not consider himself a Talmud Chacham. And since he did not consider himself a Talmud Chacham, he didn't want to act in the way of a Talmud Chacham. But that pshat is sort of a difficult pshat, because even though the Shulchan Aruch and the Halach is that one should not consider himself a Talmud Chacham, that's only in a situation where it will bring to a kula, to a leniency. But in a situation as we are discussing here, which it brings to Chumra, the halach is that one may act in the way of a Talmud Chacham. So why over here do we was Ravina not strict? So I saw that the Mefarshim suggest there's a famous Taz. The Torah says, "Ubiyoyim Hashmini Yima B'sar Losoi." Ubiyoyim Hashmini Afilu B'Shabbos. That if the eighth day of a baby that's born naturally falls out on Shabbos, the bris takes place in Shabbos. And the question is, why isn't the halacha that such a baby should not do the bris on Shabbos? Just like we know we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos when Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbos. We don't read the Megillah what's on Shabbos. We don't take Dalam Minim on Shabbos because we're concerned Shemi Yavrena Dalam Smashis Rabbim. Someone may come to carry. So why over here do we not have the same consideration? So the Taz says, if the Torah explicitly says, "Ubiyoyim Hashmini Yima B'sar Losoi," the Torah explicitly says that a bris may take place on Shabbos, the Rabbanon have no right to say that it's Asur. So they suggest that Ravina's opinion was that the Torah explicitly held that Nachyaisa is permissible. Since Ravina held that the Torah explicitly said that Nachyaisa is mutter, Ravina says, I can't say something which the Torah says is mutter should be asur. And that's why he was lenient in Nachyaisa. Amma zutra, my time demanda ochel b'nachyaisa. What is the basis? As we just said, this man d'omer feels that there's a raya midaraisa that you could eat b'nachyaisa. Where do we see this? Says the Marmida have a steichuza. The Torah says that if somebody was magdish a steichuza, the definition of a steichuza is a field that he got inherited. The halacha is that the Torah gives a specific formula how much is the redemption rate on a yearly basis. That means somebody was magdish a steichuza. If he redeems it, the maximum amount of years he could redeem it back for is 49 years. Because in the 50th year, it goes back to Hegdish. So the halacha is, there's a formula based on the years and the amount that the halacha is that he pays a seller pudyon for every year of those 49 years. So the halach is, now this is a set formula. And even though he may end up eating much more than the value of a seller pudyon for a year, Amrachmana, the Torah says, the Torah says that we use a seller. A seller is another way of saying a seller. Hachnami, here too, if somebody established a formula, the formula could be followed under all circumstances. Umandasa. So this asked the Gemara, this is a great raya that if you have a set formula, it's mutter. And as we explained in our previous shiur, the reason that is the halacha is because it's a regular business transaction, where in every business transaction there's an element of risk. I may end up having made a great deal because I'll get more payers than what I paid. I may end up getting a poor deal, but that's okay, because that's what business is all about. So ask the Gemara, so why indeed is the stay achuza not a great raya? Umanda also amalach stay achuza hegdish. Stay achuza, as we explained, is a situation of hegdish. Rechmana ukma pidyon, and the Torah gave a formula for pidyon. Here, that in other words, what the Gemara is saying is that whenever we speak about hegdish, there are special rules that apply to hegdish. Hacha, whereas when we speak about the mashkin, Havahi, it looks like a loan of money. And since it looks like a loan of money, Machsi Paribis, and therefore we have to be Machmur. Amar Vashi, Amli Sava de Masa Machasya, the Zakenim of Masa Machasya told me, Stam Mishkanta Shata, the average Mashkin is a year. Ask the Gemara, Lamay Nafkamina, what is meant with this halacha? Says the Gemara, the Achalei Shata, that if the Malva had the Mashkin for a year, Matzah Masalakli, at that point the Loiva could say that I could pay now. But if he wasn't there for a year, Loi Matzah Masalakli, he cannot ask him to leave, he cannot prepay before a year. And as Rashi explains, in our previous year, we discussed when it comes to Mashkin, there are two types of places. There's Asra the Masalki, and there's Asra the Loi Masalki. There are places where you could prepay, and there are places that you can't prepay. So Rashi says that our Gemara is even referring to a place where you could prepay, Asra the Masalki. But even if you could prepay, the halacha is a year the Malva isn't entitled to. The Ritva has a different pshat in the Gemara. He says that if it's Asra de Masalki, if it's a place where you could prepay, so then whenever the loiver wants to prepay, since it's Asra de Masalki, could prepay. Our Gemara is referring here, says the Ritva, to Asra de Loi Masalki, that you can't normally prepay. Zok the Gemara, that even though normally you can't prepay, but once the Malva had the Mashkin for a year, it's not considered prepaying. Vam Ravash, Amli Saba de Masa Machaskia, my Mashkanta. Why is a mashkin called a mashkin? Says the Gemara, the shchuna gabei. The malva is considered the person who is inhabitant of the field. Says the Gemara, what does that mean? Ladina de ban mitzra. We're going to learn a mitzvah shem later in our masechta and daf kuf ches amar aleph. That if somebody sells his field and he has a neighbor that has a field right next to his field. So the neighbor says, I want to buy the field. So he has first rights. Rights of first refusal, that's the halacha b'metzer. And the halacha is that even if the owner of this property had already sold this field to someone else, the b'metzer has a right to say that I have rights to this field and I'll pay and get back the field. Because the Torah says, v'sisa yosha v'toiv, says the Gemara, that the Malva is also considered like a Bar Metzra. Since he has rights to this field, he got this field as a Mashkin. So Rashi explains what the Gemara means to say is that he has first rights, he has first rights to this field. The Rosh says a person has to be, however, be very careful. We're saying now that the Malva, who has this mashkin has first rights to the field. So let's say I want to sell my field, and I know that the halacha b'metzra, so I have to sell it to my neighbor. So what I'll do is, and I don't want to sell it to my neighbor, so what I'll do is, I'll put the field next, this field up as a mashkin, and now I'll use this gemara to be able, says the Rosh, if it's obvious to Beis Din that that's what this loiva is trying to accomplish, then of course the halacha that the gemara just said wouldn't apply. The Sma writes that just as a malva is considered a bametzra, the halacha is that a tenant who's on a property or in a house is also considered a bametzra, and he has rights of first right refusal. And the Sma svara is because a tenant should not be any worse than malva with a mashkin. The Marshal disagrees and says you can't compare the halacha of a tenant to the halacha of a malva. A malva who gets a mashkin, as we've been learning in our shiurim, has real rights to this property. And if the loan is not paid, he will foreclose and keep this property. A tenant doesn't have that right, and therefore, says the Marshal, we can't learn the halacha of a tenant from a malva with a mashkin. The Ramban and Rashba disagree with Rashi, and they hold that a mashkanta holder is not considered a real bametzra, and he doesn't have the first right of first refusal. And therefore, if the loiva sold this property to somebody else, that the halacha would be that the malva, if the loiva sold this property to someone else, the malva cannot evict that person who bought it. They explain that all the Gemara means to say is that if the field was sold to the mashkanta holder, the neighbors can't say, well, we come before you because we're neighbors. That's the extent of the right of the mashkanta holder. But if it was sold to somebody, the mashkanta holder is not like a regular neighbor that can evict the person who bought something he shouldn't have bought. The Gemara said that Havahi, there's a difference, the Gemara said, between being paid the Hegdish and Havah, which is Mechsi Karibis. So we're learning that one has to be very careful when he does things that should not at all be ribis. So the Cheshuki Chemed has an interesting question. There's somebody who has money, and he has the ability to lend that money and receive interest. But if he will do so, the a Jew who wants to borrow money from him, and of course when he lends money to the Jew, as we're learning in our shiurim, you can't collect ribis. So that represents a real loss to this lender. So could the lender take the potential amount of interest that he would have earned, that profit, and deduct it from Iser? And he says that not. We're obligated to do what the Torah says, and not every time we do what the Torah says, even if it means some sort of a financial loss, doesn't mean that we have the right to deduct it from Iser. Having said that, he does discuss another shiloh. The other shiloh he discusses is that there's a doctor, and there's a patient that comes to see the doctor. And the patient, unfortunately, is poor, and because the patient is poor, he can't afford to pay the full fee that the doctor charges. And the doctor, seeing this patient's situation, gives him a deduction. And now the question is, could the doctor take the amount of money that he took from the deduction and use it to pay and use Maisa money for the deduction? There, he says, the Maisa money may be used for that deduction. Says the Gemara, Amarava les hilchasa loy katashi papanoi. The Gemara now reviews many halachas that we've been learning in our shiurim. So the Gemara says, les hilchasa loy katashi papanoi, v'loy kishtari ma chaznoi, v'loy kachachire narshoi. And the Gemara explains each one of these cases and what is meant when it says the halacha is not this case. Katarsha papanoi refers to what we learned earlier about the kashid rapapa. Rapapa would sell beer in Tishrei on credit, and he would take the payment in Nisan. because the price of beer in Nisan is higher than it is in Tishrei. And he felt that this is not ribbis, because as far as he's concerned, he was a wealthy man. He did not need the money that he received for selling the beer in Tishrei. As far as he was concerned, he could hold on to the beer and sell it in Nisan. So he doesn't feel that he gained anything by selling it in Tishrei and waiting for Nisan to get pay. On the other hand, the customers certainly were paying more than what they ought to, because they bought the beer in Tishrei, which, as we just said, in Tishrei, it was a lower price, and they should have been charged that price. Being charged a higher price is what we've discussed is called agonater. They were paying for the fact that they were holding on to his money, and therefore the halacha is that is not permissible. Next halacha that the halacha is kishtarim b'chazoi. They were documents that were really written in the city of Mechazor. They would buy merchandise and give it to people to sell it. And the deal was that the people they were asked to sell it, they will sell it, and the two of them would divide the proper profit. And really, the halacha is that this is permissible. However, the zakfa l'rafcha akarna, the kosleh b'shtara, what they would used to do is they would predict how much profit is going to be, and they would say that half of the anticipated profit will be given to the person who gave them the merchandise. Now, that's ribbis, because if there's a partnership, and we're going to speak about that partnership more in a moment, if there's that type of a partnership, that's fine. But here, they didn't have that type of a partnership. The partnership was that the person who got the merchandise took all the risk. And therefore, that's why it's considered ribbis. Amalei maba meima l'rav, ashi abba, my father ameima ovid hachi. That says the Mahiwad used to do that. The kiosl kamei, and when the people who he gave the merchandise to would come say kiosl kamei, and they would come to say mahaminle. If they came, they said that there wasn't any profit, he would trust them and he wouldn't ask them for any profit. Amale, Sir of Ashi, said to the son of Ameima, Taina hechis l'rei. I understand what you say when your father's alive, because your father is not demanding a guaranteed profit. And because they are not he's not demanding guaranteed profit, that's why it's not ribbis. But what will be ishachav if your father passes away? And we have this document, which this document calls for guaranteed property. Ishachav enofel shtari kami yasmi mai. What will be if your father passes away? And now the Yisoyim, who are not necessarily on the same stature of your father, they're going to demand the guaranteed profit, which is ribbis. But says the Gemara, have a kishkaga shiyotzim ofnei ashalot. What happened here was, they of course did not mean to curse. They did not mean to curse a meimer. But he said, what will be if a meimer dies? And the Pasuk Kekela says that whatever a tzaddik says happens. Have a shkoga yotzim of Nei Shalit, the Nach Nafsha the Meimer. And from here we see how careful a person has to be careful with his words. And as the Mashah explains, this is not in the category of Loilam Yiftach Adam Pailu Satan. What's meant to say, and Isur Bal Chanan says this as well, that the Pshat in this Gemara is that of course the Pasuk says, we say it a number of times every day, Ritzon Yirei of Yasa, whatever Tzaddik says happens. But here we learn that it's even more than that. The words of a Tzaddik have such an incredible power. The Bnei Yisoscha in the Sefer Agra, the Kala, explains, because it's Kishchina Medaberes Metach Groinoi. When a Tzaddik speaks, it's like the Shechina is speaking. And of course, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, something, it happens. The same thing here, even though certainly they didn't have any bad intention, that's what happened. And this is why many people have the minig that when somebody, Rahman Slan, is a chayla, sick, and we make a mishaberach, or we daven on behalf, we should not in any way say mishaberach and use the word chayla. Because once we call a person a chayla, even if he's not a chayla, by a tzaddik calling him a chayla, that becomes his category. Next we learned was that Rava said that the halacha is not like the chakirei narshoi. What does that mean? What happened there was that the people in Narush would lend money to poor people, and they would take their property as a mashkin, and then they would give back that property to the loiva with a deal that the loiva should work the field and provide a certain amount of money, a certain amount of produce to this malva. The loiva goes and gives over his property as a mashkin to the malva. And then the loiva receives the property back with a chakiris arrangement that he has to give a certain amount every year. And the people who see this look at this as a ribbis, because they say that the malva never really owned this property, that he's selling it back to the loiva. And it looks like he's taking ribbis. And therefore they said we should not be allowed to do this. However, says the Gemara, now that the way it's written, that the malva took ownership of this mashkin, and he was inhabited on this property for a while, and only after the malva was on this property, I saw that most Rishonim explained for 3 years, so that shows real ownership of the property. So now, when he goes and leases it back to the loiva, that we're lenient. And the lenient reason is, we want that the loiva should have a way to borrow money. Says the Gemara, Shapadami, that's why maybe it should be permitted. But says the Revelam Milsi, it's actually incorrect. And the halacha is that we can never do this type of arrangement because it looks like ribbis. Our Gemara now begins to, our Mishnah in the Gemara begins to speak about a way to avoid the problem of ribbis. And we all know that one of the ways to avoid the problem of ribbis is by making a heter iska. What is the definition of a heter iska? What that means is, if we have two people in that relationship, we have an investing partner, the person who's putting up the capital, and we have a managing partner. And what happens is that if they enter into a relationship where the investor puts down money, and the managing partner will have to give a certain amount of profit to this investing partner, that is full-fledged ribbis. If, on the other hand, the investing partner will have the entire responsibility, and if it makes profit, he'll get 50% of the profit. But if there's no profit, he won't take anything. Nobody's going to want to enter into that type of relation. And because of that, we're going to learn a mitzvah shem on daf kuf dalar on the base, kol iska, the way to enter into a heter iska situation is tia machtzisoy halva or machtzisoy pikadim. Half is a loan and half is a pikadim. Therefore, half the money on the managing partner, he has to pay back because he's a loiva, no matter what. And that all of the profit from that 50% belong to the managing partner. And the investing partner is not entitled to anything, because if he's going to get anything, it'll be ribbis. The 50%, which is a pikadon, that becomes the profit of the investing partner, and therefore the halacha will be that he gets that proper. The problem with this prach is, why would I make you, why would I give you a halva? I'm only giving you a halva on the first, on one half because of the bikadin. You're only agreeing to get into this relationship on the bikadin because of the halva that I gave you. And because of that, Chazal said that that can't work. And there has to be another way, which we're going to be speaking about in the shiur now, how to avoid this problem. So if we look at the standard heter iska, there are six clauses in a standard heter iska document. One is that half the money that's being invested will be a halva, and the other half will be a pekadin, as we just described. The next clause is that the investing partner gets the profit from the part that's the pekadin, and the managing partner will get the profit from the parts that's halva. The next clause is that the managing partner will get paid for working with the bikadin. Because if not, it's ribbis, the fact that he's willing to work with the bikadin. Why is he willing to work on the bikadin? Because I gave him an halva, so he has to get paid separately. Next clause is that the managing partner cannot say that the money just was lost. He has to bring Adam to prove that the money was lost. And the next clause is that the managing partner can't say that it wasn't my fault, that there wasn't profit. If he says so, he has to swear. And the managing partner also has the ability to say, I don't want to give a reckoning, and I'll just pay. If I don't give a reckoning, I'll pay a certain rate instead of giving a reckoning. So what happens here is, as we just described, we solve the problem of getting ribbis for the halva, because he's getting paid for the bikadin part. He's also going to get the reason that the investing partner at the end will end up with his money, because there are three clauses in this heter iska that protect him. One clause that protects him is that if the managing partner can't bring Adam, which is very often the case, to prove, we can't bring Adam to prove that he lost money or didn't make money, so then he's entitled to the rate that was agreed upon. Number two, there was a clause, as we just described, that he's going to have to make a shvua to that effect. And since he's going to have to make a shvua to that effect, most religious Jews are not interested in making a shvua. And since most religious Jews are not interested in making a shvua, he'll say, I'll just pay the agreed upon rate rather than make a shvua. And then the third point is that, as we also just described in speaking about the standard clauses of the heter iska, if the managing partner says, well, I'm not interested in getting into a whole calculation, I'll just pay whatever I have to pay, rather than entering into a back and forth bookkeeping with you, he has a right to say so as well. And since, if that's the case, that's going to normally be what happens. And that's why the malva, the investing partner, we don't call him a malva, we call him an investing partner, will end up getting the rate that he assumes he's going to get. So says the Mishnah, Ein meshivin chenvoni l'machzeh schar. A person can't give a business person that wants to enter into this iska relationship that he'll give him produce, he'll give him merchandise, and he'll sell the merchandise that he receives. And then after he finishes selling it, he'll give him back, of course, the principal, the value of the merchandise that he gave him, and also give him back 50% of the profit. Because what's happening here is that if he's giving him the fruit as a halva, if he gives him profit, he's going to be giving him ribbis. And if it's half pekadin, as we just described, half pekadin and half halva, so he's giving him the profit on the pekadin shear, because the investing partner lent him money. Similarly, says the Mishnah, a person shouldn't give cash to somebody else, to a business person, to buy assets and to divide the profit. Elm Kane, even though if we have this relationship of Maschel Hava Machs Bikodin, unless on top of what he did, he also has to pay him for being the managing partner. If he pays him to be the managing partner, and the Gemara Mitzvah will explain what does that mean, how much do you have to give, how much is it considered that you paid him to fulfill this, how much do you have to give to be considered that you paid him for this obligation, for this job. Says the Mishnah further, a person can give eggs to someone else, and the deal that they'll have is, I'll provide the eggs, you provide the hens, and the hens will sit on my, your hens will sit on my eggs, and they will divide the eggs at a specific rate, and will sell those eggs and divide the profit. Because since the person, the managing partner, who got this relationship, it took upon himself 50% of the loss, that's called ribis. Similarly, ain't shaman agolim v'siyachol amachza. A person can't give to a shepherd animals, calves or young horses, that they're going to evaluate what they're worth at this point. And you, the shepherd, I'm investing with you my young animals. You, the shepherd, will have to take care of these animals for 2 years. And then we'll divide it, and we'll divide the profit. And again, even if we have a chatzia halva and chatzia bekodin, Elm Kane, unless the investing partner pays the managing partner, he has to pay him for the time that he took in raising the animals, and the food that he had to pay to raise these animals. If they don't do this kind of evaluation, rather that they make up that whatever happens, they're going to divide. So now there's no ribis, because now we have just an old-fashioned partnership where one person is contributing, investing the money, another person is investing the time, and they're dividing 50-50. On the Gadon Lisai, when somebody enters into this type of relationship where I give you the animals, the young animals, I, the investing partner, and you, the managing partner, have the obligation of raising them, till when do you have to raise them? Achehem Mishloshim, until they come to the point that they're a third of the anticipated size that they shall grow to. Chamor, and if we made this type of arrangement with a donkey, Achete Tanis, unless when it comes to the point that it could carry something. Because donkeys are raised for carrying. And therefore, since donkeys are raised for carrying, that's when it's considered that our investment has been consummated. So we learned in our Mishnah that when we have this relationship between the managing partner and the investing partner, and the investing partner is giving the managing partner half as a halva and half as a pikadon, he has to also pay him. Because if he doesn't pay him, it looks like ribis. Because why did I give you my pikadon to work with? Because why did I lend you the money? Because you were agreeable to go into this relationship with me. And that's why it looks like ribis. To avoid this problem, the investing partner has to pay the managing partner. How much does he have to pay him? Kapoil bottle. Ask the Gemara, my kapoil bottle, what does that mean and why is that enough? Amar Abaya, poil bottle, sha'oysa malacha the bottle. If somebody has a job, and it's a difficult job, and he's willing, this is the way Rashi explains, and he's willing to take an easier job and get paid less. That's what Rashi says the definition of kapoil bottle. Tosfos says the definition of kapoil bottle is how much would a person be willing to get paid not to have to come to work. V'tzricha, and the Mishnah taught us this halacha about the heter iska, both when somebody gave peiris to Dcheveni and when somebody invested money. And the Gemara's question now is, why was it necessary to teach both cases? Says the Gemara Tzricha, it was necessary to teach both cases. The Tana Cheveni, if we only had the case of Cheveni, who the sagale would supply a bottle. There it's satisfactory to pay the managing partner as a kabaya bottle. Mishum, the Lainafish Terche, because he's not really working that hard. He has a store. Getting into this relationship doesn't require much from him. Aval, if I just invest cash, Aval Maas Likman Paris, the Nafish Terche, it's not a person that already has an existing store, and I'm just giving him one more type of product to sell. Emeloi Sagale Kabayo Potl, their halacha should not be adequate, should not be adequate, Kamash Malan. Says the Gemara. So ask the Gemara, Itanish Maas Likman Paris. So we ask the Gemara, so it should be enough that the Mishnah should teach us that by, if I gave him cash, if the investing partner gave the managing partner cash, all you have to pay the investing partner, all he has to do and pay the managing partner is kapoil bottle. So isn't that certainly going to be the case by a Chemveni? So now the question is, the Mishnah should have just mentioned the case of Moss, and we wouldn't need to have the case of Chemveni. Says the Gemara, Itan and Moss, the Kaplan Peiris, have him in a Hossam who the Kaboy buy a bottle. That's why I have to pay him. And the Gemara is assuming that Kaboya bottle means a significant amount of money. Because as we said, the Nafish Turkey, this is a business that he hasn't been doing till now. Alvat Chemveni. But if I'm giving merchandise to a Chemveni who's selling anyway, then Lai Nafish Turkey. So giving him just more fruit, one more type of fruit to sell, doesn't really mean that much. Ema Sagli B'mashu B'alma. Giving him even the smallest amount should be satisfactory. The filo tovim malabitzir, even if the Chevani will be able to use the dip of the investing partner. Or he'll just get one dried fig. That should be considered enough of a pay. Tzricha. But as we're going to learn in the Gemara, even though the Gemara is now saying that the managing partner has to get paid kapoil bottle. In reality, when we have heter iskas, what the managing partner gives, what the investing partner gives the managing partner is just $1, and that's enough to be considered a salary. It says the Gemara Kami Izi Tanagoilim Alan Simon. Tana Rabbana Kamus Choroi. How much does the investing partner give the managing partner? It says the Gemara Beim Ruba Beim Uut. Whatever you give him, even a small amount or a big amount of money, it's satisfactory. Divrei Rameya, that's the opinion of Rameya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, I feel like Tovel Mal Betzir, even if you just give him some dip to stick to dip his bread into. V'loi Ochli Mal Gregus Achas, gave him one dried fig. Rav Shimon Yechai is much stricter, and he says Nois and Loik Eschar Mishalim, he has to pay him a full salary. So now the Gemara discusses what does the investing partner have to give to the managing partner. Tanabana ain't shaman. When we give the animals to the person, the investing partner gives his animals to the rep shepherd who is the managing partner. You can't give something that doesn't produce lemechtza, that they should divide it 50-50, unless you pay him for all of his expenses and for his time that he needs to do in raising the animal, because he doesn't have anything from these animals otherwise. But if he gives him animals that could work, then they could give him even a minimal salary, because the managing partner will have the benefit of being able to work with these animals, and that will bring him income. Even though goats don't really work, the halacha is neshechovos, they do give milk, and that's enough of an incentive for the managing partner to have received something. And similarly, as Rechelim, we could give them sheep. Again, even though sheep are animals that don't work, he takes the wool and whatever falls off by itself, or whether it walks in the water or walks through thorns, and tanagoylis, and you can give him chicken. Again, even though chicken is something that doesn't work and doesn't, but it gives eggs. And therefore, the managing partner is going to get those eggs, and therefore, he doesn't have to get a serious salary. Says the Gemara that from the Brice that we learned, it seems that Rabbi Yossi is arguing in the Tanakhama, that according to Tanakhama, that even though the Roy is getting the milk or he's getting the sheep, you have to give him a salary. So ask the Gemara, the Tanakhama, why would it be the opinion of Tanakhama that Giza v'cholok l'cholov l'sipik l'schar amolai? Why isn't the wool or the milk that he's going to get be able to cover what he's working for, l'schar amolai mezonai? Says the Gemara, the Giza v'cholov, if it's an animal that gives wool and it's an animal that gives milk, kule amolai pligi, that is enough for the managing partner. Ki pligi, the machloikis, is where the shepherd only takes nesyube, which is the whey, but he doesn't get the actual milk. The toisri, and he only gets the wool that falls up by itself, but not really significant wool. Tanakama Savala Krivshim Ben Yechoi. The Tanakama holds like Krivshim Ben Yechoi. Dama Noisulayim, Schar Mishalayim. You have to pay for that managing partner's work. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Savala Kavua. Dama Afilu Lai Tavala Mala Betzir. That Rabbi Yosef Yehuda holds like his father, Rabbi Yehuda, who's of the opinion that any minimal payment is satisfactory. He just gives him some dip. He just gives him one fig. And therefore, even though he's just getting the nesyubi, the chalva, the whey, was just getting this very poor quality wool, that's enough of a payment. A woman has a hen, and she could tell her friend, her neighbor, who has eggs, give me the eggs, and I'll put my hen on top of your eggs, and they will now have chicks, and I will be entitled to get 2 chicks a year, because this is not considered a halva; it's considered a work relationship. This is the way she's renting the chickens in order to get chicks. Ishish, however, in a case where Ishish Amal Chavrta, one woman said to another woman, Tanagayla Shali, Beitzim Shalchi, we're going to enter this relationship. The hens remain mine. The eggs are yours. Vaniva at Nachal B'chavrachim. And the chicks will divide. So this now is an iska of Chatzi Chalva V'chatzi B'kodin. Who the matter? Rav Shimon Oyser. Rav Shimon says this is considered an iska, unless you have to, and therefore the person who owns the eggs has to give the person who owns the chicken some sort of a salary. Rav Yehuda says that this is not a case where we're concerned that she's working with the hava, that the woman who has the chicken, the hens, is working it because of the hava that she got. Rav Yehuda asked the Gemara, why? Rav Yehuda like buy schar mala mezonai. Why isn't Rabbi Yehuda hold that she should be paid? Aren't we learning throughout our shir that the managing partner, in this case being the woman who owns the hens, she has to be paid? Answers the Gemara, Ikebei Mezuris. They're going to be eggs that are going to not, they're going to be fertilized eggs. And they're not coming from a male, from a rooster. Those chickens, those eggs, will never be able to become chicks. And those eggs remain the property of the owner of the hens. And Rabbi Yehuda says the fact that she's entitled to those bay mezuris, that's enough for her to be considered having been paid. Because Rabbi Yehuda is following his opinion that even the most minimal payment to the managing partner is satisfactory. Whereas, and even if it turns out that there won't be any Bay Mazuris, she was willing to take that risk to get paid with that. Rav Shimon says you have to get paid significantly. Getting paid Pay mezuris is not considered being paid significantly. Talking about makom shnagu lahalis char kosef lemos behema, in a place where somebody gives young animals for somebody else to raise them, and then they'll divide the animals as they, the profit and loss of the animals, then he has to pay him for the job that he has to do in raising these animals. Malin, the investing partner, has to pay the managing partner. You have to do whatever the minig medina is. That if you gave the calves together with their mother and the young horses with the mother, you don't have to pay for it. Because they, anyway, the children will follow their mother, and therefore it doesn't represent a lot of work raising those children. But filu, even a place where normally you pay, in this case, it won't be necessary. Ask the Gemara, how could Rav Shimon Gamliel say so? Rav Shimon Gamliel, doesn't he hold that you have to pay? Says the Gemara, he's going to pay with the glolim, that the waste that these animals produce that can be used as fertilizer will be the payment to the managing partner. So ask the Gemara, why doesn't the Tanna Kamma agree that that should be considered payment to the managing partner? Says the Gemara, glolim of Guri Mafkala, people are mafkar the glolim, and therefore that can be considered the payment. Amar Nachman, Halach Rabbi Yehuda, that you don't have to give a lot, you don't have to pay the managing partner a lot. Halach Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, that the goats and the sheep, we could just use the wool and the milk to come out. Halach Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that if you're giving the mother and the young, the cow and the calf, then you don't have to pay because the calf doesn't really represent a lot of work. But B'nai Rav Ilish, the children of